It's certainly convenient at times that a little research on the web about, say, lawnmowers will result in most of the web ads you see for the next day or seven being about lawnmowers. It can be a little creepy, too, when you realize that it's not some nice young person in Kenosha offering you those ads. It's a machine, a computer algorithm that picked up on your interest in lawnmowers and reflected it back to you. So we accept artificial intelligence up to a point. Our guest this hour wants us to understand it a bit better. Ashland's James Adams is the co-author with Richard Kletter of the book Artificial Intelligence, Confronting the Revolution. Both of the authors have resumes so long we take up the rest of the hour reading them. James Adams is a journalist, security expert, writer of 15 nonfiction books, entrepreneur, and the former host of the Jefferson Exchange. I said welcome back when you first came in, but welcome to this new studio.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey. It's pleasure good to be here.
It's good to have you. I was reminded in the research about your interest and concern about cyber terrorism. So it's a good way to get into the book. I mean, the general question is, who do you see as the bigger threat right now, robots or people?
That's a very interesting question. I think actually we're in a transition phase where people remain the threat, but robots will take over that. So we'll go into a phase of what's known as autonomous warfare, where the robots will decide who and how to kill.
And are people getting close to delegating authority, or have they gotten to that point already? I would think they'd be testing these programs for a long time now.
Yes, and as we move towards the artificial intelligence world, so the speed of decision-making is such that the only thing that can make those decisions are the robots, and that will decide everything from nuclear war down to fighting at the front line, which will be carried out not by people but by robots.
Will land war like that even? I mean, I know we've been talking about robots fighting battles and certainly envision them in movies like Star Wars, but will fighting on battlefields even be necessary anymore if we can cripple other countries through cyber means?
Well, I think that there's always going to be a need to take and hold territory. And taking and holding territory has been done down the generations by people. But in recent times, people have moved further and further back from the front line. And now robots will represent the front line. So the way that territory will be taken and held or countries conquered will be more a robotic solution than a people solution, I think.
So the book is called Artificial Intelligence, Confronting the Revolution. So the book begins with a comparison with the Industrial Revolution. How big do you see the AI revolution in comparison to that?
Well, I think this revolution is going to be much more dramatic and so much faster. The Industrial Revolution took 150, 180 years to unfold, and this one will happen in the next 5 or 15 years. So it's very, very quick and will impact absolutely everything from doctors losing their jobs, lawyers losing their jobs, and anybody who works in a mechanical way, they will lose their jobs too. So the impact on society is going to be enormous and almost unimaginable in the scale and depth and reach of it.
So, I mean, certainly we had people losing their jobs in the Industrial Revolution, but very, very, you know, handsy kinds of jobs that involved rote things that machines could do fairly easily. But now you're talking about doctors and lawyers losing their jobs, some of which we've heard about. We've seen certainly, you know, cyber medicine and robotics and surgery and things like that. How far do you see this going then?
Well, if you think about how many professional tasks are done, they're usually many of them pretty routine. So, for example, if you have a lawyer doing a non-disclosure agreement and that perhaps costs $1,000 and takes several hours for a lawyer to do with about, let's say, 90% accuracy, and a artificial intelligence solution, which is around today, can do the same job in 29 seconds. And do it with far greater accuracy. And so that's going to apply across every single profession, from accountants to lawyers to doctors, everybody. And that is going to mean millions of people who have had a certain lifestyle will no longer be able to afford that lifestyle and will no longer have a job.
So you're talking about this affecting all ends of the income spectrum. Obviously, if we're talking about doctors and lawyers, we're talking about taking out some people who make significant money now, not being needed any longer.
That's exactly right. And not only that, but it's people who will even now be investing a large amount of money in their education and carrying a significant amount of debt. So the knock-on effect in society is going to be very large, because there are going to be tens of millions of people losing their jobs, and doing so in a very, very rapid phase. And there is no current job retraining program, no education program, nothing, no national effort to prepare for this, which I think means big trouble.
So what will be the jobs that humans can still do, and who will still make money in a world of AI as you envision it?
Well, there's going to be we already see in the society in which we live today an enormous income inequality. So the top 1% has seen their income grow manyfold in the last 20 years, whereas the bottom 40% have seen their income either stagnate or decline. So historically in societies all over the world, that is absolutely unsustainable, and it is the grounds on which revolution is made. So we're going to see a lot of people left on the wayside, and then the 1% will continue to benefit, because they will be the mothers and fathers of the revolution itself. And then there will be a new creative and problem-solving class that will do things that algorithms cannot do. But even those won't last that long, because as machines develop the capability to think for themselves, so creativity will be outsourced from the human to the machine.
James Adams is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He and Richard Kletter are the co-authors of Artificial Intelligence, Confronting the Revolution. You can confront us about the subject matter here on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 over the phone. James could probably still recite that number from his days hosting the Exchange. The email address is jx@jeffnet.org. That's a really intriguing phrase you just dropped a moment ago about the 1% will be the mothers and fathers of the revolution. In terms of engendering it because of resentment against them, or in some other way?
No, because those who are already at the top of the income tree are typically leaders of what's become known as the market states, you know, the large companies. And those large companies are the ones that are creating and overseeing the algorithms that are furthering the revolution. So they're going to continue to benefit. And for a lot of the algorithmic solutions, they're going to cost money. And the people who are going to be able to afford to benefit to the maximum from the algorithms and the solutions that artificial intelligence produces are going to be those who can afford it. So that accelerates the income inequality that is already present in society.
So for the people who think, well, you know, I don't go online much, I'm retired or I'm about to be, I mean, how much might the AI revolution affect them?
Well, it already is in a way. I mean, even if you're part of the older generation, you use your iPhone, you play music, you go on Amazon. All of these things are part of the AI revolution. And if you think about just the way the iPhone or your cell phone has evolved in the last 10 years, it's been absolutely extraordinary and continues to accelerate. So that's going to be a thing that everybody is going to, depending on your perspective, benefit or hate as we move more rapidly down this road.
So there could potentially be, in our descriptions about the job market and even high-end jobs like doctors and lawyers getting replaced by machinery, we're talking about lots of people with not much to do. You do raise the issue in the book of universal basic income, UBI, but if you don't have that many people working, how do you find the resources to give people a basic income?
Well, I think that's a very interesting and basic question, which no one has yet satisfactorily answered. What everybody seems to agree, all the researchers and the economists and the social scientists and whatnot, is that tens of millions of people are going to lose their jobs. Is it going to be in 5 years or 15? Nobody knows. Is it going to be 30% of the workforce or 20% of the workforce? Nobody knows that either. Everybody simply agrees that the effects are going to be enormous. The idea of a universal basic income as a kind of parachute to help people is an interesting idea, but no one has figured out how you can actually fund it, because, as you rightly say, you have a diminishing number of people paying tax and creating the revenue that would pay for a universal basic income. Bill Gates has the idea that you put a tax on robots. Well, that is an interesting idea, but no one quite knows how that could work either. So we're in this rather weird position where you have on the left coast the Silicon Valley entrepreneurs who are creating all these solutions that they're very excited about. And on the right coast, you have politicians who don't even understand how Facebook works, never mind what to do about the artificial intelligence revolution. And that gap in knowledge, understanding, and then the application of solutions is a very, very big problem for us going forward.
Well, and it's not just political leaders. It seems like journalists are also having some trouble keeping up understanding about things. And if, you know, if we're in the position of trying to help the rest of the world understand an issue that we are covering, it seems like we're falling behind along with the politicians. Maybe not quite as far, I will say, in the defensive journalists, but still not quite keeping up.
Well, I'm not sure I would, as a former journalist, ever really try to defend journalists myself. But I think that's true. And I also think, though, that we, because this is such a fast-moving environment, it is very, very hard to keep pace. We're used to a world where we can at least understand what's happened yesterday and what might happen tomorrow. And this particular world is not really like that. It's moving very quickly. It also has, unlike the first industrial revolution, which was about steam and rail and so on, this revolution has 1,000 or 10,000 points of light, each of which is transforming different aspects of society. And keeping pace and understanding and comprehending all of that is really, really hard. And I don't think anybody in the mainstream media is able to do that. And most mainstream media these days is focused on trivia and entertainment and not on substance. And so this is passing a lot of them by, I think.
James Adams is himself, as he points out, a former journalist, former host of the Jefferson Exchange, entrepreneur, author many times over. He and Richard Kletter are the co-authors of Artificial Intelligence, Confronting the Revolution. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange. You may have questions, comments, things you have thought about AI and want to get that expanded. The phone number is 800. I get confused with AI and 800. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. We were talking about political leaders not really being able to keep up with what's happening in the AI revolution, but you also think that the rise of Trump and Brexit and nationalism comes back to AI as well?
I think there is a, and I would preface this by saying that I've spent most of my life covering or being involved in warfare of different kinds. So I come at this with a very particular perspective. So which may or may not be right. I think that we're entering a difficult phase in democratic societies generally, where you have income inequality, which we've talked about. You have corruption at many levels in the political process and in government. You have a disenfranchised and growing number of people at the bottom of the economic scale. A sense of hopelessness. And these things create difficulties in society. And one of those, I think, resulted in President Trump's election. There is a significant, and if you look at who the voters are, they're the very people who are at the bottom end of the scale, who've been, in a sense, abandoned by the process. and Trump represents hope. Well, that hope is I think, going to be betrayed, and they're going to find that they have nowhere to turn. And in historically, so civil unrest does not occur typically because the underclass rises up. That's the sort of popular image, but it requires leadership. And what's interesting about the artificial intelligence revolution is that it's going to impact leaders as much as followers. And so there is this ferment growing, I think, where people want to change, but they don't know how to do it. And they can't get their voices heard because the political class is so divorced from the reality that most people are feeling. And so how to change that is a big problem. And I'm not by any possible stretch of the imagination a revolutionary, but I do understand very well and have reported on and seen firsthand the consequences of not taking action when there is this kind of pressure in society. And we all think we're immune. We're never going to be Bosnia. We're never going to be Northern Ireland or whatever. And I think that's a dangerous fallacy. And I think we need to be thinking about, which is why I wrote the book, thinking about what to do about where we're going and to be aware of the challenges that lie ahead.
So where you see the rise of the likes of Donald Trump and Nigel Farage expressing sentiments like, let's bring our jobs back from over there, when there are no jobs to bring back in a future where there are more robots doing jobs, does it then become a revolution of smash the machines or something?
Well, I think that would be a fairly logical how people would respond, kill the machines, give our jobs back. But the idea, as Trump has been saying, let's recreate the coal industry, let's bring jobs back to America. It's so divorced from how the world, economics, society, evolution, everything actually works. It's just fantastical that a president of this great country could mouth such drivel. But there we are. And I think that when these ideas are found to be or seen to be absolutely void of anything, then that is going to increase the anger and people will seek other forms of action to realize their hopes, which are hard to find. I mean, if you're living in, not in Southern Oregon, but if you're living in Appalachia or other parts of, or in parts of the car manufacturing country, where your whole world has been destroyed in a generation, it's very hard to hear people saying, oh, everything's all right, really, because it's not.
So, how do we move forward then? How do we make people who are in positions of responsibility and authority pay attention to the concerns about a future where there will be fewer jobs?
I think it's very difficult to try to inform a political class who politicians as a group have. For generations now, looked at the past and legislated for the past because that's how they work. You know, this happened, therefore we need to do something about whatever it was that happened so that it doesn't happen again. We're entering this phase now where things are happening so quickly that looking to the past is actually pretty fruitless because by the time you do that, the future has come to you and you know, you're not moving fast enough. So the politicians need to have a lesson in developing strategies. So if you think about if children who are going to into schools today are being educated and provided with knowledge which is going to be irrelevant by the time they graduate and preparing for jobs that probably won't exist. So the whole way we educate needs to be transformed. The way we train people for work needs to be transformed. And this is not a local effort, it's a national. How do we create a multi-billion-dollar jobs training program for America where you recognize that many jobs will disappear, but new jobs will be created? How do we prepare for that, and how do we treat that as a constant? And you can take every aspect of how we live, and you can think, how is that going to change, and then what do we need to do to accept the change and adapt to it? And it's a massive challenge. It's the biggest thing that our society and our world has ever confronted. And we're kind of sleepwalking into history, which is not going to serve anybody very well.
So, James Adams, the major concerns here are in displacement, then, of things that will be very different from the world we know now. I have not asked, of course, in this discussion of artificial intelligence about the concept of the singularity and whether you think there's going to come that moment that Kurzweil and others talk about, where we get to where the machines become smarter than us, more sentient and able to make some decisions.
Yes, I think we're moving down that road where machines will become thinking machines. To what extent? I mean, there's one suggestion says that as machines become thinking machines, so on Monday morning they might have an IQ of 50, by lunchtime they have an IQ of 500, and by supper time they have an IQ of 2000. Well, when that happens, we're further down the evolutionary ladder than the machine. And various people are thinking about how to adjust to that. So there's a thing called a brain-machine interface that is being developed where you might inject carbon nanotubes into the bloodstream. They might swim to pre-designated parts of the brain, unfurl, connect up, create a network, and have access to all knowledge.
So a real melding of people and computers down the road, potentially.
But the only people who'd be able to afford that are the people who've got several million in the bank. So it's not going to be much help to you and me, I don't think.
Artificial intelligence confronting the revolution. James Adams and Richard Kletter. James, good to see you. Thanks for visiting.
Thank you.